take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
On the heels of what was thrust upon our world under the guise of a global health crisis, the societal division between the vaccinated and unvaccinated has emerged as a stark reality, fueled by a relentless campaign of fear-driven propaganda. As these fear-mongering tactics continue to permeate our communities, the once unified fabric of society is fraying at the seams, torn apart by contrasting beliefs and conflicting information. The vaccinated and unvaccinated find themselves on opposing sides of a widening chasm where trust is eroded and understanding is scarce. Amidst the cacophony of fear-driven narratives, individuals are left feeling isolated, misunderstood, and judged based on their vaccination status. What was once a personal health choice has now become a polarizing factor, defining relationships and shaping interactions in a society plagued by uncertainty and anxiety. The relentless barrage of propaganda has sown seeds of doubt and discord, pitting neighbor against neighbor, friend against friend, and tearing at the very foundations of societal cohesion. As we navigate this turbulent landscape of division and distrust, it becomes imperative to seek common ground, foster empathy, and bridge the gap between the vaccinated and unvaccinated. By shedding light on the underlying fears and concerns driving the societal rift, we can begin to heal the wounds of misinformation and misconception that have festered in the shadows for too long. Only through open dialogue, compassion, and a shared commitment to understanding can we hope to mend the fractures in our society and move towards a future of unity and solidarity. In the midst of this division, many who made the choice to get vaccinated, whether it was through their own free will or through coercion, have been irreparably harmed. Many have died. We can expect these numbers to grow exponentially as boosters continue to be offered with little regard to consequences. What can we do as a society to stem the tide, protect our fellow citizens, and alleviate unnecessary human suffering? What can we do to ensure the voices of the injured and lost aren't drowned out by the next wave of fear-driven propaganda that is surely on the horizon? You're listening to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Before we get started today, I do want to encourage our listeners, if you have questions or comments, or perhaps you want to share your own experiences with what you're seeing on the front lines of healthcare, you can now submit those to us by sending them directly to nurses@americaoutloud.com. We will be featuring your questions and comments every Friday on a special Q&A episode with the nurses. We encourage all of you to engage in the battle and find your voice in this fight. But until you are able to do that, we will continue to be that voice for you. Joining me today is Nick Catarano. Nick is an outspoken activist, advocate, patriot, and Christian serving on the front lines of this fight since the beginning. As a longtime Disney employee, he led the battle to drop the nonsensical mandates that were threatening the livelihoods of unvaccinated workers. Over the past 3 years, he has become a strong voice, standing in the gap and seeking justice for those who have been injured. Nick, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Kimberly. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about your background and how you found yourself just embroiled in this fight that we've been in for going on 4 years now.
Yeah, it's, you know, in the 4 years, it's hard to keep time. I look back and I think things that happened 5 years ago were literally last year. It's yes. The time has just expanded because for those of us that have been involved in all this, it's just like we're doing so much and trying so many different things. And maybe that's kind of like the silver lining, you know, life has become a heck of a lot more meaningful, as a result of all this. But the stakes are higher than ever. We're literally fighting for people, fighting for their lives, fighting for our communities, our country, our families. So it's been something. Yeah. So when all this started, I wasn't looking to be a voice or be outspoken or to get any kind of attention. I've settled into a life of just, blue collar worker, happy with the things I was doing in my life, loving to travel. Wife and I were involved in, just helping people in need and getting out there, but just on a quiet basis, living our faith out in tangible ways. But with Disney being one of the first companies, nationally and pretty much internationally to lead the way on issuing the mandates. I was a union leader. So I got the call early before anybody knew about it. I was told it was coming down the pike. I knew it was coming down the pike. And as a result of a lot of different things, there would be a lot to unpack there. I just was against the mandates. And I thought that just because of everything I was seeing in the vaccine rollout, as I was paying attention, it didn't make any sense. I think that day that I got the call from a union head, I spent 40 minutes explaining why it was a bad idea and why I was totally against it. But I was told that the company had a right to do this, and nothing was going to stop it. And my words were, it's a runaway train. There's nothing we could do about it, but I totally disagree with it. I got off the call and thought, there wasn't much that I could do about it, but I was wrestling with the whole thing. The next day, my wife would have COVID after we had gone through the first wave of COVID, and we thought COVID was pretty much eradicated. And then a few days later, I would end up in the emergency room in real bad shape with a positive COVID test, told that there was nothing they could do for me. Go home, when you come into crisis, come back. And they would give me something called remdesivir. At the time, I had no idea what remdesivir even was. I wasn't paying that close of attention because the first wave had died down. Wife and I had learned about a lot of things, vitamin D, quercetin, black seed oil, high doses of zinc and everything else in the first wave. And we had sent care packages all over the country to friends, family of other friends. And as a result of those nutraceuticals, nobody that we sent the package to ended up in the hospital or died on us. So we knew that there were things that could work against everything going on. Surprisingly enough, this variant that came up, all our nutraceuticals were not enough to stave it off, to hold it off. So we got sick really bad. And in the course of that, I learned of ivermectin, we took it. 2 hours later, my wife was really going into crisis and I was in bad shape. 2 hours later, we felt a whole lot better. And then the next day we were able to get prednisone and erythromycin. And, within a couple of days, it was totally licked. And that led to another rabbit hole of why aren't they letting people know that these treatments exist? We knew that the first wave were the hydroxychloroquine and the nutraceuticals. Now the second wave hit us. And ivermectin seemed to be the silver bullet, along with a few other things. And that really pushed me down the rabbit hole. And I realized that they were literally the epiphany that came out of it, just to sum it up, was, oh my God, they're killing people. By keeping these things from people, we know that the strategy was to get everybody into a shot. But when I looked at keeping the early treatments from people and the playing with the COVID numbers and the protocol in the hospital that now I understood was remdesivir and vents, it all was pointing to ultimately what they were doing was killing people knowingly, with an agenda. And that's how I got in the fight. And then I came out, I didn't know what I was going to do. And there were a lot of things that led to what I did. But I started by writing an open letter. It was to Disney. It was 20 pages long, the first one. Somebody told me that it was too hardcore. Nobody was going to take the time to read it. So we condensed it to about 2,000 words. We started a website called goofyvaccine.com. And I put up my open letter and I just went on a media campaign, swinging as hard as I could in all directions. And that's opened up the door to everything else I've done.
And you were employed by Disney at this time, if I remember correctly. Had you been furloughed during the pandemic, but before the rollout?
Yeah, I was furloughed. They actually let us go. As a union leader, I was spending 8 hours a day. We started a food bank. All the hotels, I'm in the banquet business. People didn't know where to turn. The unemployment system was a mess. So we started a food bank and we were feeding thousands of families. We started with like 200 families. We were feeding thousands of families every weekend. Spend the whole week setting that up. I was furloughed and I started studying for my insurance license and doing, finding different creative ways to make some money. But in the meantime, I was still a union leader, so I was still negotiating with Disney. We were still fighting to bring everybody back. Eventually, I got brought back as a shop steward. I came with the first wave of my employment status, and then I wasn't there long before the vaccine mandates were being rolled out.
And did they eventually let you go because of your decision not to vaccinate?
Me personally, no. I was so, everybody was told that they had to file a religious exemption, medical exemption. I was watching that not work. I was totally opposed to even doing that because to me, it didn't make any sense. But as a result of organizing a lawsuit with Jeff Childers, who was leading, I had Citizens Defending Freedom was backing us, and we had Children's Health Defense that came in financially to help out, and it was Jeff Childers who said, "Go ahead and file the religious exemption because it will stall for time," as they were starting to let people go. So I ended up doing a scathing. Very respectful, but a scathing, you guys are committing crimes against humanity, and this is an atrocity, religious exemption. And then I filed it with them, but I made it public at the same time. So they've never even responded to my religious exemption. But I have it. I could share it with you if you want to share it with your listeners. And but fortunately, with the state of Florida and the governor finally coming around and realizing these mandates were wrong and calling a special session, along with activists all over the state that fired it up. And as I understand, all our rallies and we teamed up with the firefighters and as you know, your friend Sam, our mutual friend Sam Eaton and we medical professionals, we just made a lot of noise. And we were able to stop the mandates, and I kept my job. Thank God I got through it. A lot of people that didn't file. What was unfortunate is a lot of people retired out of fear. They didn't want to lose their benefit packages, so they just retired. Now they're all calling me angry that they were forced to retire. And the people that didn't file the religious exemption as it was recommended, they lost their jobs. And then the next wave were the firing of people over religious discrimination, because they were forcing us to wear masks with N95 and warning signs on them and a shield, which was something that they did for everybody for a while, but then they allowed the vaccinated to take it off. So we were standing out and being discriminated against. And the crazy part is all the vaccinated were getting COVID, and many of them were getting it really bad, ending up in the hospital. There were unexplained deaths that were happening here and there. And yet we were the ones that had to stand out and explain to guests like why we were wearing these. We look like the vectors of disease, while everybody else got to take their mask off. So our attorney now, Rachel Rodriguez, is leading that fight that's in the courts over the discrimination aspect, because a lot of people, cast members, long-term cast members that were award-winning, that were in great employees. They got so frustrated and they got tired of wearing these things, and they decided to take a stand, and they were fired as a result of it. And now my website, goofyvaccine.com, you can find my open letter if you go into the menu there, but it's also geared now towards supporting that lawsuit over discrimination. And you could see their stories there and support them. Anybody can support them. And I encourage people to support our lawsuit because if we take down Disney or take a stand, and I don't mean take down Disney, but make them reckon for what they've done, it sends a message to everybody else, because where Disney leads, many corporations follow.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's so important to take a stand, because none of those policies that they came down with, they were all nonsensical. None of them made any sense. But, you know, for the vaccinated to not have to wear masks while the unvaccinated were forced to, made no sense, because there was, you were, the viral load was similar between the vaccinated and unvaccinated. So the disease was transmitted by the vaccinated and unvaccinated alike. So it made zero sense other than to be discriminatory and to create that type of division in society. It didn't make any sense. So I would encourage people alongside of you to, yes, please support these people that are taking a stand. And thank God you do live in the free state of Florida, because you have some incredible freedom fighters out there in the medical profession. And in as you mentioned, the firefighters and just your politicians, and Governor DeSantis has and Joe Latipo has been incredible as far as what they have done to kind of push back, because you don't see that around the country from politicians.
No, I mean, I'm so grateful in so many ways. But I think, unfortunately, we got really hopeful when we saw a lot of these things happening, and we expected more. And there's a lot more pomp and glitter and glam to a lot of the actions that could be a lot more solid. We're grateful, though. We're grateful, and opening up the state was amazing. But yet there's still, you know, we're really disappointed in a lot of ways that there wasn't more robust actions to prevent this from happening in the future. Absolutely. Where the shots are still on the street and we don't understand it. Dr. Ladapo called them the Antichrist of medicines. I mean, you can't get any more stronger in language, but you would think that the response to labeling something that we got to understand that the administration supported him saying it has not in our minds equaled the crime. And then the fallout, the injured are everywhere, and they're desperate and they're running out of options and they're losing, you know, my friend Michelle Utter has lost her insurance, her job, there's no disability. There's nothing. And the things that were keeping her going are now gone from her. And she may even lose her ability to live in her, you know, in renting her apartment and everything. So it just feels like there's just, we love the things that were done, but how the help has to meet the crime. And the crime has been these shots that were given to people, and the victims are scattered all over the street, and nobody's addressing them. There was a little bit of acknowledgement with a town hall and a discussion and a grand jury, but I mean, I tweeted something to the governor the other day. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. We don't have all the answers right now, but you don't get anywhere until you start somewhere. And acknowledging that we have to do more. You know, we brag on our state with a surplus of money because he's done a wonderful job fiscally getting our state in order and making amazing decisions. But what kind of civilization are we? What kind of state are we? What kind of people are we? If we're watching our vulnerable and our victims of these crimes just dying in silence and alone, and that's where my frustration is right now. And I just don't know how to express it any further. I don't know what else to do, but I'm praying about it, and I'm really just sounding the alarm as the most I can, as I'm watching people quietly as I'm talking to them personally, and I'm literally, you know, I get emotional, and I'm sorry. Because you're watching people drown in front of you, and you're tied to the shore, just watching them drown out there, and our elected officials are just watching them drown, and they know it because their people are speaking out. Our churches, which should be standing in the gap, you know, if they don't know, if they can't see the need and the suffering, and they're closing their eyes to it, what good are they? What good are they at this time? And, you know, you can have all the message of salvation you want, but if you're not, you know, when Jesus came, he came to help the sick, the injured, the vulnerable in society. And here we have a perfect opportunity to make an impact in people's lives and bring them into the love of Christ. and they're just turning their other way. They're sticking their heads in the sand. And it reminds me of the churches in the when the Nazi Germany was coming to power, and they just all turned the other way and dug their heads in the sand and thought this will go away, and you know, we'll get to the other side of this unscathed, and look how that worked out. So anyway, excuse my rant, because that's something that just, you know, I'm really have that urgency on my heart, and I'm really frustrated at the moment with this whole process.
Yeah, you know, and I'm right there with you, because it has been so frustrating. You know, I started Nurse Freedom Network, which is, I started in July of 2021 when they first started coming down with these vaccine mandates. And, you know, I knew at that point that the mandate hadn't come down at my facility yet, but I saw it happening at facilities where that I had worked at previously, where I had friends and colleagues, and I saw them, you know, losing their jobs and being threatened and coerced into getting this vaccine. And, you know, I wasn't anti-vax coming into the fight at all. I had received all of my vaccines. My child had been vaccinated, you know, with his childhood vaccines, all of that. So it wasn't as if I was coming into this anti-vax, but I think, and you may have mentioned this earlier, it was just like, kind of like a let's take a wait and see approach, you know, and I felt like maybe the elderly or those with maybe multiple comorbidities, maybe it made sense for them to take it, but it should have been a risk versus benefit conversation, and it should have been a personal medical decision. I don't believe in a one size fits all approach to healthcare. So the Biden coming out and recommending a shot in every arm, in my opinion, was a very dangerous, irresponsible, short-sighted decision that was made. So I started Nurse Freedom Network to take a stand against these unconstitutional vaccine mandates that were being handed down to us. And I thought that when I did that, and I was like, okay, now I've got this platform, I'm going to turn around and everybody will be here to fight. And there really wasn't. There really wasn't that large wave of people. I kept turning around going, okay, where's everybody at, you know?
Right.
There were a few that jumped on, but they did not come on in large numbers. Did you notice that when you started speaking out that you expected kind of more people to jump on with you, but they just didn't?
Yeah, and that brings us to an interesting point as well. I think one of the psyops of all this was to make people feel that if they stood out, they would be part of a handful of people and they would be easily targeted. What was interesting as I started fighting at Disney and my interviews became public and I was on the local news, people were stopping me. I'll never forget the first one. I had a Haitian family that I had become really good friends with. They stopped me in the storeroom, the wife did, and says, "We're all scared. We don't trust our churches. We don't trust Disney. We don't trust the union. They've all abandoned us and we don't want these shots." And then I'd go another 10 feet and somebody else would stop me. I'd go another 10 feet. So they were all in the same building, feeling the same way, but scared to even talk to each other. And here in America, people were scared to talk about their hesitancy to a experimental medicine. That was a great accomplishment of PSYOP atrocity that they were able to pull off. What was interesting is, I was, as a result of that, the Haitian community, many people were coming to me, and then all of a sudden it was organizing behind what we were doing. And eventually the union got hold of it and there was some strong arming and everybody went quiet again. And that was a real shame, because it would have been a very powerful message at the time to have the whole Haitian community resisting the shots with us. So little by little, they were dividing us into sub-tribes. They were keeping everybody, you know, the vax, the unvaccinated, this person, that person. But I was, you know, it was a double thing where I was surprised at the numbers that didn't come forward. And I knew how many people were resisting. I was surprised by the people that did come forward, and some of them were vaccinated. And I gained great respect for the people that came to our rallies that were, you know, a good friend now. He came out, he was vaccinated. I thought he was unvaccinated. He's out there rallying and supporting and bringing people. And I'm like, and when I found out he was vaccinated, he goes, "I didn't want to take the vaccine, but I had to do it to see my dad in the hospital who was dying. And I could not let my dad die alone." So there's all these stories littered through there, people that were coerced into these things. But what was interesting with the numbers, and I'll try to move through this quickly, was when we did the rallies, and our first rally was 50 people. They took a picture and they said it was 30 people. When we had the next rally, which was 400 people, they didn't show any of those images. They just refused to show them. When we did a rally, Justin Harvey here, who's a great activist in Orlando, and he had a great rally over there in Osceola, or I can't remember the name downtown. And then they took a picture of like 5 or 10 people, and then he showed send them a picture of like 400 or 500 people, and then they put 10 people. The idea was always to let everybody have a visual that you would be alone. And that's happened with the CDC, right? They said it was 93 or 97% of the people were vaccinated. At Disney, they said it was 93 or 97% vaccinated. But the numbers that were leaked to me, because the union was freaking out and people leaked the numbers to me, that after the deadline where people were fired or people were lingering because they had a pending religious exemption request that nobody was responding to, so they were still in the system, there were 10,000 unionized cast members that had resisted filing their vaccination status on threat of losing their job. That's a high number. We had about 60,000 people back to work or less than. You had about roughly maybe 5,000 that weren't unionized. So that was like a roughly 25% block. We have the Northeastern study that eventually came out saying that it was 25% were resisting the vaccines. So there, imagine if there would have been just 10,000 people showing up to the rally when we were getting 300-400 people, which was great. But if you would have had 10,000 people in the streets while we were being yelled at and people were throwing stuff at us for we were killing grandma and everything else on the street, that would have been a totally different story. And this would have been over a lot sooner. But as a result of fear, many of the people, even now, I'm surprised by the people that stopped me in Disney, and they've been watching me the whole time. And now they admit to me that they're not vaccinated, and they were in the wings and the shadows hoping for the best. And people thank me for helping save their jobs, but they didn't stand up. And a lot of it is fear driven. And that's the sad part. People have been scared. And I keep saying that if you're scared at this, what are you going to do when these maniacs take over the whole system? And now they have the power to enforce and come to your door. Like, you know, we just saw a military video come out where the guy was dragged out with like 6 or 7 soldiers and put in handcuffs because he refused a vaccine. That's what's waiting for us on the other end, as people are being scared and self-preserving. So I was very surprised. But I've come to learn that most of it is just been fear and self-preserving. They want us to do all the fighting. I can't tell you how many people called me, and I had one couple I remember that called me at 11 o'clock at night. They had me on the phone for over an hour, and then their tone got angrier and angrier, telling me all the things that they were angry about when those were the things I was fighting. And then I'd give them a simple, hey, we're organizing a lawsuit. Why don't you join us? They didn't want anything to do with it because they were too scared to be, but they wanted me to do it all. And those of us standing out. So I think fear is driven, and selfishness and people wanting other people to do all the hard work has been a lot of what has surprised me, but I've learned to accept.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. I will say that when, you know, I didn't mean to come into this as a polarizing figure in any way, shape, or form. You know, I always try to approach people, you know, and come from a place of unity, compassion, understanding, of love, right? But it's so difficult because it's frustrating, because when I think about it, you know, the power lies with the people. It always has. We have had the numbers to right this ship from the very beginning, but people unfortunately lack the courage. And I have people, and I'm sure you have this happen to you as well, that come up to me all the time and they're like, Kimberly, thank you so much for everything you do. Thank you for speaking out, and thank you for standing for us. I wish that I could do what you're doing, but I have a mortgage to pay. I'm like, listen, I have all of these things too.
Right.
And I think that really angers me a little bit. I think they think they're giving me a compliment, but it's really not. It's really just frustrating, and it angers me. I'm like, you don't understand. Like, you're Apathy is kind of like why we are still here. If we had just all stood up in great numbers and said, no, enough is enough. Like, we could have stopped this a long time ago. And like you said, you know, who knows what is coming, and people are too fearful to stand up. And it's going to be, you know, they classify us as like the outliers, right? They don't think that there are very many of us because the people are just kind of quiet and in the background. And there are a lot of people when they're claiming these vaccinated numbers, there are a lot of people that got those fake vaccine cards. I personally refuse to do that. Because then we just, you know, feigned compliance is no better.
Yeah. I was at that crossroads too. And I decided to go against it the same way.
Yeah. We have to take a stand. I actually had somebody provided me with two cards, one for me, one for my husband. And I briefly thought about it and I looked at my husband at the time and I said, no, I said, we can't do this. We have got to take a stand because if we don't stand up now, you know, where do we go from here? You know, it's only going to get worse. So I made the decision to take a stand. I took a giant leap of faith. I had actually been exempted from the mandate because, you know, I had already left the bedside once I realized what was happening. My patients were being systematically murdered for profit with the remdesivir and the ventilator protocols. I realized all of that was happening. I left the bedside and I started working as a telephone triage nurse. So I had been exempted as a work from home employee. But when they
but if I can interject there, that's amazing that they exempted you, because I was getting calls from all over the country of people that worked from home for Disney, never left their house, never saw anybody personally, never went to an office, and they were still being forced into taking the shot at their house. That's the kind of craziness that was going on. This was not a campaign to keep people safe. This was a campaign of coercion and force. So I'm happy that in your case that didn't happen and some people were spared as a result, but Disney was amazingly doing, you know, forcing people in their homes to take the shot, just because they could.
Yeah. And that it was like a whole big thing that they had to meet several times to decide if they were going to allow these work from home exemptions. I was like, this is ridiculous. We have no, you know, direct patient care. So that's when we knew it was all about control. But yeah, you know, I ended up resigning from my position because they wanted me to recommend the vaccine for children. And I just absolutely refused to do it. So I, you know, looked at my husband and I said, I can't do this. I've got to take a stand. And I took this giant leap of faith and I really dug in and relied heavily on my faith. And, you know, I went from there and I said, we're going to make a difference in some way, shape or form. And here we are. We're nearly, over 2 years after resigning from my position, haven't had an income, and I am somehow still standing here with my head above water. So I can only, you know, I can only lend that to God's provisions.
And I have experienced the same thing. You know, when I looked at what was really going on and I had to make a decision, and as a Christian, to me, it's Ephesians 5:11, have nothing to do with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. That was the driving force behind a lot of my early fighting. And I saw God maneuver and work and provide. And in the end, it doesn't mean everybody would have kept their jobs. I mean, I've been fortunate more than others, but he's always worked it out, and he protects you, and nothing's going to happen until he allows it to happen. And I think having that kind of trust in him and that kind of faith and knowing him personally, for he is sovereign and he is alive and he is everywhere. It made a big difference in my life, and it's turned out to be the right decision, because I'm so glad, because I can't imagine. I mean, think about it, Kimberly. I can't imagine, you probably can't imagine, what if you would have stayed quiet and just started injecting kids and recommending the injecting of kids, and to have that on your conscience, knowing what you know, and how many people are doing that out of fear it's mind-boggling. Like, how do you live like that? I'm so glad I don't have to live like that. And that's the whole message of the gospel, is you don't have to live like that in fear of death and fear of losing things. You have to do the right thing at all cost. And history is riddled with examples of people that didn't do it and the atrocities that followed. So, yeah. Thanks. Thanks
like
for
I,
Thanks for doing that. Taking your
Absolutely. And like I tell people all the time, you know, we've got to become comfortable with being uncomfortable, because until we are able to do that, we are always going to be somebody's slave. But we are up against a heartbreak. And when we come back, I want to go ahead and dig into your work with the vaccine injured.
Okay. Thank you.
America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best in-class apps available on Apple, Android, or Alexa 24/7. Great talk radio. All of our shows go to podcast the following day. You can hear them on apps such as Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcasts, and many more. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts for me. Don't forget to check out our online store at americaoutloud.shop, where you can find all of the products that we represent on our network at a discounted rate, including ASEA Redox, which I can personally speak to seeing fantastic results with, including better sleep, increased energy, improved mood, and a decrease in my joint pain. Use promo code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your purchase. I'll catch you on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
It's time and this is what.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Today's high-stress, on-the-go lifestyle makes it hard to stay heart healthy. Lifestyle changes like exercise and diet are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support three aspects of heart health: cholesterol, blood pressure, and triglycerides, with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 13 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from americaoutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Wherever you're listening from today and whatever you're doing, I thank you for giving me the gift of your time. Be sure to make americaoutloud.news your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. We all must do our part and share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and videos so we can help secure America's future. If you're just joining us, I've been talking with activist, advocate, and patriot, Nick Catarano. Let's jump right back in. Nick, thanks again for being here.
No, thank you. I'm really enjoying the conversation. A little therapeutic. We're like in a
Yes.
therapy session talking about these things.
Yeah, seriously, I was like, we went a little bit over on the break because I was like, I don't even want to stop the conversation because it is, it's very cathartic to talk to somebody and who understands and who's been in this space and feeling these kind of, similar frustrations. But I want to talk about, you've been doing some really incredible work with the vaccine injured. And that's something that I have tried to do since my inception with Nurse Freedom Network. And then, kind of pivoting to, I started a private membership association, Remnant Healthcare. And the reason I started Remnant was to be able to provide compassionate care to the vaccine injured, because many of them have been just abandoned by the medical community. They are completely abandoned. And I'm not saying that we have all of the answers, but we're going to try to figure it out. I can tell you that right now. Vaccine injury is so varying, right? There's so many varying degrees. The symptoms, they vary so widely, and the severity varies so widely. But I can understand the frustration of the injured, because we have so many people that are coming out of the woodwork, and I'm not saying that they're ill-intentioned, they have ill intentions at all, but they have so many people that are just kind of throwing these like products and different things. Oh, try this. This is the thing that's gonna, help and fix everything. And I can imagine how frustrating that is, because most of these who have been injured, they're financially devastated. They are financially devastated. About a year or so ago, through Nurse Freedom Network, we held a couple of fundraising webinars where we would bring the vaccine injured on to kind of share their stories. That's been my thing, is I really want to give them a platform and elevate their voices, because they don't have one. So I would do that, to hold webinars. I would ha have them come and speak at events. But they do have people, and it seems a little bit predatory to me, and I'm sure that they feel that way as well. I'm sure that, like I said, some people may genuinely want to help. Some of these products may very well work for some people. We all know that, what works for one may not work for another. But, I can understand their frustration, and they are feeling very abandoned. So what was it that led you to kind of pivot from the fight from, the mandates, to really being a voice for and elevating the voice of the vaccine injured?
I don't know the exact pivot. I think just having a tender heart for people in general, and just being aware of my surroundings and being in that space of a voice as I was got outspoken, as I did interviews, and some of them were around the world, and the people were reaching out to me, sharing their challenges. I mean, people were, it's just with the mandates and losing everything, and then that evolved to other people reaching out over time, and just feeling overwhelmed, like, what do I do? How, who's going to do something? And I think one of the catalysts was my friend Lori Bontel. She's here in Florida. She's an amazing activist and lady. And in the process, it was, I think it was around the December, we were doing these rallies, we were fighting mandates and lockdowns and all this stuff. And her sister ends up in the hospital in Ohio, and she runs up there and she's calling me every day and calling our, we had a little tight-knit group, and telling us the process. And they basically labeled her COVID without a COVID test and basically killed her sister. Orrin Mendenhall has her case now. But seeing what it did to my friend, and then being wide awake, because I knew what they, I went to the hospital and they told me about remdesivir, and I learned about remdesivir, and it was a failed Ebola drug that was, it had no business being used at all. And then just witnessing what it did to her, and then being exposed to a network of people that have lost, my friend Patty Myers lost her husband, and Aaron lost a friend of mine, Aaron lost her son. And little by little, I got exposed to a community of people. And then I was hearing of the vaccine injured as I was talking to the paramedics. I was amazed. They said before COVID, when we were rushing people to the hospital, everybody was labeled as COVID. So whatever they were going into, but as the vaccines were rolling out, they were seeing these people that were just got a vaccine and they were going septic and all this stuff. And as they were rushing them to the hospital, when they would rush them to the hospital, they would label them anything but vaccinated. It was a result of, it was sepsis, it was this, it was that. So I knew that this whole operation was happening, a mislabeling. And as a result of being close to it, me, Lori, and my friend Rebecca Ricks, Moms from America, a good friend of mine, we said, let's do a press conference. And we try to roll in those that were dealing with mandates, those that were vaccine injured, and the families of the protocol families that lost loved ones, children, parents. My friend Dana lost her mom, and they literally announced when they were going to kill her. That was crazy. And what was amazing is at that point, I think we only got one vaccine injured that was willing to speak. They were all too scared to speak. And the reason they were scared to speak is that they're going to 30 doctors and nobody's willing to help them. So they don't even want to lose the doctors they have because they're scared to say they're treating a vaccine injured patient. So at that time, and we had one vaccine injured, we had people that were discriminated against. Stephen Davis came and some firefighters came and spoke about their discrimination, but no vaccine injured were speaking up at that point. But we did do the protocol families, and we thought, you know, that was going to be a short interview or a short press conference. We only had ABC show up, and then they ran out of there. And all we had left was Epic Times sitting there with Nanette Holt. But once the vaccine, the protocols family started talking, I mean, the emotion in the room and the tears coming from the crowd as well as the stage, and you could not, once they opened up, I wasn't going to dare get up there and tell them to stop sharing because it was so raw and so fresh, and a lot of bonding came out of that. So that was, I think, my opening into just seeing the pain and the silence and the lack of resources and people helping. And then my friends Scott and Jill Kiley out of Collier County, as they were trying to, you know, we came up with a thing where we were working with Karen Kinston, trying to get the sheriffs involved to do something about these shots and getting the injured involved. But already by the injured people I was talking to and realizing at that point, so many people had just been using them for things and nobody was realizing the situation and how they were feeling and things like that. So that when I saw the effort of we really need to bring these people forward. But I also intuitively knew from the people I was speaking with, and then I got more involved as that whole thing fell apart and Karen had, you know, all kind of situation happen. For those that know her situation or not, that whole effort of going to the sheriffs was really interesting. And even the sheriff that was on board basically defaulted to the grand jury and everybody else just went into hiding. So I just kept working, trying to figure out, okay, how do we bring this forth? And the more I started talking to the injured, the more I was so moved that more had to be done. And that's just kind of how I've been involved. It's just more had to be done. And as you get to know these people, these injured personally, as people with the needs and the vulnerabilities and just the incredible courage for those that are speaking out, has been amazing. And then with the vax unvax bus that went out there and people finally found the courage to step forward, I thought that was an amazing job that they did. And now I'm finding so many more people willing to step up. And I just have just been in the space. I just bet the right, I don't want to say the right place at the right time, but the timing has been better. And we've tried different ideas that not everything has stuck, but a couple events working with Dr. Vila. Dr. Vila in the Villages, the largest retirement community in the world. You know, when I first met her, she had 600 vaccine injured patients. I invited her to speak at the Resilience Tour with Dr. Maria Mogg and Dr. Ryan Cole. When they came to Orlando, they asked for my help. She had 700 or 800. Next time I talked to her, she had 2,000, and now she has 3,500 vaccine injured patients that have come to her clinics. Just one doctor in one place. And that really inspired us. We did one event with her patients, and we brought in Michelle Utter and the coerce nurse Danielle Baker to speak, and Lindsay House did a short video for them, and just to see that response, and that led to the next event that was a little bit larger. But behind
the scenes,
was
that the one in March? The one you just did?
Yeah, that was the one in March where I just didn't. You know, originally the idea for that was with just Michelle, as I, you know, talking to her and trying to understand the situation and how we could help. And there was the frustration with Deidre Long, Lindsay Briones, Steve Ordonia. They had been on with the governor at press conferences and at his town hall. And so many milestones where we all felt like, okay, now things are going to happen. The grand jury is being impaneled, and they felt like now they would get some help or resources. But a year later, nobody's being helped and nobody answers their calls. I think a lot of it is because they don't know what to do. And this grand jury, after a year of being in panel, came out and said lockdowns and masks were bad. I mean, that's great. Yeah. You know, that's great. But how does that deal with the magnitude of the crime and the magnitude of the need, which has just really been frustrating? So they felt like they wanted to have a town hall where they got to express their voices. And that's where that event was born out of. And then, you know, one thing led to the other. And I brought, you know, I wanted to pepper in some doctors and lawyers. And so that's how that event came together, was just out of Michelle pushing for advocacy to get everybody's voices heard.
Michelle's a great voice for the vaccine injured. And, you know, it breaks my heart to think that so many of the injured, just, they feel like they are forgotten. You know, they feel like they don't matter, that we're moving on. And that really couldn't be, you know, further from the truth. I think that there's still so many of us that are standing here and ready to fight and elevate these voices. I was sad that I couldn't make it to your event. I wanted to come, but I was actually, I had a previous commitment at another event. So I hope that you're going to do more. I hope that we can collaborate and work together more, Nick, and try to really stand in the gap for these injured.
I want to do more. I just how do we affect and meet the needs? I mean, there's just, you know, there's a couple you know, we got React 19, we got Shaq's organization that reaction right now escapes my mind. But that's not enough. And the need is not enough. And the resources are not enough. You know, and speaking of Michelle, right now she's really in a bad place. And I just hope anybody, you know, look her up on Twitter. She has a good set go. She really could use help. She has been out there fighting and swinging for a lot of people. There's so many needs, and I'm not saying all the other needs aren't as important, but her needs are really urgent right now, as they've cut off her insurance. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's no disability, you know, no job. The IVIG, which was being covered under the insurance, was keeping her going. And now they've cut that off. And that stuff is like 16,000, or, you know, and even a cheaper version is like 9,000 a pop. So, you know, I ask people to keep her in prayer and give whatever you can. You could find her, you know, Michelle Utter on Twitter.
And we'll include a link to her Gives and Go in our show notes as well, so that listeners, when the show goes to podcast, will be able to access that. And I would highly encourage support Michelle in any way you can. She has been an incredible voice for the vaccine injured, all while she is, you know, she's suffering herself. But like you said, there's multiple organizations. But I think that the key, honestly, in my opinion, Nick, is that we need to collaborate more. All of us need to come together and collaborate. Yeah. This fight is massive, right? It's massive. And we're not going to win one individual, one organization. We have to come together and fight this together. We all have the same goal. Right?
And that was part of my vision of putting that event together, and the people that I called to be part of it. And I wanted to even involve more people. It was just a little hard, but that's the idea, is like, we're not going to win. We're not going to win by ourselves or individually. I think we have to bring all the resources and people together to tackle this, because the number of injured, many people are just waking up to the fact that all their illnesses that were spontaneous, that came out of nowhere, are actually vax injuries. Right. So yeah, I 100% agree with you and love that you're saying that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just like, this is not a competition, right? We're not in a competition with one another. We're all here to help. We're all here to help, and we need to be coming together and making that happen and standing in the gap for these people. I can't stand to see human suffering. I cannot stand it. And I'm going to do whatever I can to stand in the gap. That has become my life's work since 2021. And, you know, I've decided I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life and my nursing career to caring for the vaccine injured. And to me, it's almost an act of penance because, you know, I like I said earlier, I wasn't anti-vax prior to the pandemic, but it really opened my eyes to so much. And when I think about, you know, how I have encouraged vaccines in the past, I feel like it's an act of penance for me to really stand in the gap and assist those who have been injured.
Yeah, you know, and I thought about, you know, for those that have gotten it wrong, right? I think there's a lot of people that are shameful within the industry, politicians, a lot of stuff, and pastors, and it's led them into being inactive and frozen from doing anything because they don't want to open up Pandora's box and take responsibility, or maybe they don't know, you know, and it's okay. You know, I think of Zacchaeus, right? In the Bible, where he was the tax collector and Jesus says, I'm here to, you know, spend time with you. And right away he said, if I've taken anything falsely, I'll give it back tenfold. I'll, you know, and it wasn't that was required for his salvation. It was that was the result of him knowing that he was accepted of God and he changed his life. And I think that God's grace, mercy, and forgiveness is there, but you got to step into it and you got to open up to it. And then let your works be the fruit of that forgiveness that's available for you. And the beauty that will come out of that, because I think we've recently seen a doctor with a big following came out and said, I got it wrong.
Yes.
That's so healing to the people that are in the sidelines waiting to be acknowledged. You know, every time something like that happens, it is really a powerful, powerful effect on those that are fighting in the trenches, that are injured, that are all those things. So it's a powerful encouragement. It's the gas that keeps us going from point A to point B and on and on and on. So, you know, it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to have gotten this wrong, but how long are you going to wait till you admit it and get it right?
Exactly. I say it very often, you know, like, we can't carry the guilt and the shame, but when we know better, we're called upon to do better. So that's what we're trying to do through what we do with Remnant Healthcare and what we do with Nurse Freedom Network and what you're doing in this fight. You know, when we know better, we do better, and we're going to continue to do that. So I think that the mea culpa needs to come, accountability needs to come for many of these people. But if you're starting to realize that you got it wrong, it's okay. Like, we are here on this side of this fight with open arms, and we are ready to welcome you into the fold, because there have been moms that have been out here screaming for decades about their vaccine injured children. And, you know, we just kind of looked the other way. So I am just so encouraged that I was welcomed into this fight and plan to, again, spend the rest of my career assisting the vaccine injured. I can't believe we're out of time because I have so much more time that I want to talk.
Right.
But we're going to have you back. We're definitely going to do something else. Nick Catarano, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thanks for a great talk. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. That's all the time that we have for today, friends. But remember, we are here on the air 5 days a week, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can also catch the encore at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please be sure to tune in and listen to myself and my amazing sister nurses. As we walk you through all of these hot topics, we will empower you with information and education. We will advocate and we will stand in the gap for you because we are nurses and this is what we do. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton, and you can find me here every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Until next time, be safe, be well, and God bless. Remember that we are in a war for truth. We are putting out a bounty on the real misinformation and exposing the purveyors of propaganda. No topic is off limits as we shine our lights and expose the darkness.
It's time.